as we're up here like, oh, I can't believe they did this. I can't believe this. My friend turns to me and says, isn't this what you said you're working on? Didn't you say, you know, you were going to hold yourself accountable to talking to people who are different than you? And like, after my eye roll, I was like, yes, you were right.
Hey there, I'm Julie. Welcome to Uncomfy, a podcast about sticking with moments that challenge us. We share the stories of real people in moments that challenged their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down, they stuck with the discomfort. They stayed curious and open. And they're glad they did. We hope these stories inspire you to stick with it too, because there is so much to gain. New empathy, deeper relationships, more clarity about our own views. I'm glad you're here. Now, let's get uncomfy. Here's a story about how curiosity turned a tense situation around at a hotel pool. I'm joined by Misha Lerato. She's the founder of I Am We Are, which is a nonprofit that empowers youth in South Africa to confidently own their future. Misha, what a pleasure to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Julie. It is my absolute pleasure to be here with you today.
So the story you're going to tell us actually takes place when you were involved in an earlier organization you were helping to co-found, which is called Unite. And we'll probably have a chance to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But we need to know kind of just before we dive in, what's the big idea? What's the focus of Unite?
Unite is a collective of people who just got together to help figure out how to bridge the divides in our country. Simple as that. Really focus in on our political divides.
Okay. So this is the mindset that you're in, is trying to figure out how do we bridge, how do we better understand, how do we reduce the polarization in our country. This is the focus of your life at the moment that you find yourself at a hotel pool with some friends. What was going on?
So I'm at a pool in Southern Virginia, like Virginia Beach area, celebrating a friend's birthday. It's myself and two other Black American women. That's important to the story. And we're just lounging. It's restful and peaceful at this hotel pool. And there's another older Black American woman there that's there with her two grandchildren. And again, they're just frolicking. And we're just very kind of having a chill day. And then all of a sudden come careening into the water with like a cannonball, multiple young boys, most of which were white American except for one. And that's important to the story because I think the narrative that we had going in our heads was we felt disrespected. It was like the atmosphere completely shifted when these young people came. And it wasn't so much about young people being young people, because they were quite rambunctious, but it was also about the adults that were watching this take place didn't say anything to the young people that were with them to say, hey, be respectful, be mindful of the other people that are here at this pool, or just even recognizing that, like, we were already there. There was something going on, and these kids were just all of a sudden just took over the whole place and were just running amok. And so to your point about Unite, my friend, as we're up here like, oh, I can't believe they did this. I can't believe this. And we really felt like it was a racial thing. My friend turns to me and says, isn't this what you said you're working on? Didn't you say, you know, you were going to hold yourself accountable to talking to people who are different than you? And like, after my eye roll, I was like, yes, you were right. And so I said, okay, like I'm in my bathing suit, put some clothes on. And I walk across the pool. And I remember, I kind of assessed the situation. There was one guy that seemed to be in charge. And I walked over to him and I explained to him what was transpiring. I explained to him, like, I introduced myself, who we were, what was taking place, what the mood was before, and sort of he could see for himself what was taking place now. And the beautiful thing about that conversation is he got me out of my own head and out of my own narrative that I was creating based on my biases.
I mean, this is a moment where you chose to kind of engage rather than just mm-hmm. stay in your lounge chair fuming. I mean, what was your goal in walking across the pool deck to engage with this man who seemed to be in charge of all these rambunctious kids? What were you hoping to do? Set him right?
You know what? I think I had literally just gotten back from South Africa, and in South African culture, and I've lived over there for quite some time. South African culture, like any adult, has sort of permission to correct or sort of talk to a child. And so I think my goal was in this moment is like, I recognize I'm in the US. I can't just yank up a child and say, stop running around and sit down. That's my spirit and also my culture, what we would do. But I think my goal was to get him to get these kids to behave. That was my goal.
Were you at all anxious about that? I mean, this would make me incredibly uncomfortable. Were you thinking, oh gosh, this could go bad this way, or I don't know what to say, or what if he gets mad? Was any of that going through your head?
Definitely. Definitely. Like the grandmother had gotten up from the pool because it was so bad in that moment that she had gotten up and gone back to her hotel room and like slammed it, you know, with her kids. Yeah. So that was also sort of what prompted me to get up. And I think for me, I'm a Black American. I know the history of what's happened in this country. And so for me, there's also that fear of like, I don't know what's going to happen when I talk to this man. And it was a whole large group of adults. And, you know, I honestly just, you know, stereotyped based on sort of the area of the country we were in, sort of the way they were dressed, you know, all of these other things. I had this whole stereotype of who they were. And so I was sort of also facing my own fear of like, what's going to happen because we thought this was a racially charged situation. What's going to happen when I go over here and talk to him?
So how does it go from there then when you walk over and say, hey, your kids are being kind of disruptive? And then what? Sort of how did you get that into a place where you could have a moment of understanding?
Well, I listened. And so I explained, you know, I kind of introduced myself and sort of explained the situation and what we were feeling. And what he shared with me is that, you know, they were there for a little league tournament and they were from out of town. And he explained to me the joy that these young people were having about being at the pool. And he also explained to me that the day before, the hotel manager let them, you know, sort of run around and behave in the way they were. But then he listened to me as well. And he was like, I understand what you're saying. And I pointed out to him, you know, like you saw that woman, you know, with her young grandchildren slam the door just now, et cetera. And so from there, he apologized. And he also explained that the one child that was really causing a lot of the commotion, he has, you know, behavioral challenges in general. And every time they go someplace, that's sort of who he is. So he apologized for his behavior as well. And we kind of worked and talked through sort of how we could change the situation. So he asked the boys to kind of calm down some and to be mindful of us at one side of the pool and if they could kind of stay a little bit to the other side. And then he also, because we weren't even in the pool, it's just really the running and the splashing and the jumping.
Yeah.
But the other side of thing is he went over to, because the grandmother was on the base level of the hotel. So he went over to her room and knocked on her glass and tried to apologize. She didn't accept it. And I ended up, you know, sort of getting in the midst of that conversation and trying to get her to like receive what he was saying. But we were able to get the atmosphere in the pool to calm down so my friends could enjoy themselves. And the grandmother did eventually come back with her two grandchildren. And our conversation got to such a point where, like, I got to learn about his dreams and who he was and where he worked. And his dream was to take his son. His son was in junior high school. He just wanted to travel to Alaska with his son when he graduated from high school. And again, I just get back from South Africa. I travel as, like, it's my lifeblood. I'm always on planes. And so for me, I also had to sit with like, wow, I thought this man was this and this and this. And it allowed me to check myself and humble myself based on sort of also my privileges that I have and how I was looking at the situation. And so I was able to give him some tips on how he could travel and how he could achieve that dream. And I think in that rapport, somehow, you know, we ended up being Facebook friends and like, you know, not only were we had a lot of, like, his picture had like a deer that he had just killed, like, you know, hunted on. And I was like, no, I don't eat meat really like that. So, you know, there was another difference that just sort of I laughed at when I saw the Facebook profile picture. But I think he even offered to like take me on a date by the end of the conversation, you know, which I think I politely refused. But I just thought it was beautiful that we could start from sort of this tension to a place where we had built up a rapport and a camaraderie where, you know, he, you know, saw something in me that he liked, that he was willing to offer me out on a date. But I think for me, it was really at that point where I said, this is who I want to be and what I want to do. And like anytime I'm creating a narrative with somebody, about somebody, I am challenging myself to go be curious and go learn about who they are. And sometimes I'll even tell the person, like, I just want you to know, I thought this about you and this about you. So thank you so much for really sharing with me who you truly are.
Wait, are you saying that you, since that time, have lived your life where anytime you encounter someone and you've got a narrative and maybe you're frustrated or maybe you really clearly think that you're different or that you disagree, you're like actively going into that and acknowledging that?
It's a practice. it's a practice, Julie. It's a practice.
That's incredible.
Now. So my name, Misha Mishi, who lives, and I added Lerato, it's my South African name, it means love. So again, it's that accountability. If I'm saying I'm going to be somebody who lives love, that means part of that practice for me and part of the name for my, even my nonprofit, I Am We Are, which comes from Ubuntu, that I am because we are, I need to be able to see myself in you.
How do I start that conversation so that it goes well and doesn't turn into some like them being, what is she trying to do? Is she going to try to argue with me? Or, you know, what is her story about me, right? How do you do it?
Yeah. All right, Julie, my answer is going to be simple. I don't know if it's going to be enough for you, but, and I'll give you a little story to go along with this, but it starts with hello. That simple. Like, honestly, people... The media, really, I think the media, movies, et cetera, and our own biases and stereotype have us thinking like most of our neighbors and the people around us are just hateful and, you know, et cetera, and everybody's out to get you. And like, so I feel like fear is pumped into us all day, every day. And I am somebody, and I've got the proof to back up what I'm saying. During the last election, I drove from Atlanta down to New Orleans because I live in DC and most people in DC area are, you know, Democratic. And I was like, we were talking about Trump supporters and we were talking about, you know, conservatives. And I was like, well, I don't really have conversations with any of them. I don't know who they are. So I drove from Atlanta to New Orleans and just pulled over at random stops. I'm saying, Julie, I pulled over like at night at a random truck stop in the middle of like Alabama, like that kind of stuff that again, as
and
a
what
Black
just
American
like walk
woman,
up to a truck driver and be like, you know, or as somebody who had like, you're just looking for people who have Trump bumper stickers or whatever. And you're like trying to talk to them.
Well, that was a moment of just talking to people and like, who are you? What's your story? How do people perceive you? So we didn't talk about politics, but you know, that pull story led me and empowered me to do that. And this was really about me challenging some of my fears, you know, that I have around this country. But from even doing that, then when the election came, you know, I went up to in Maryland, my mother lives in Northern Maryland. And I went up to the place with the houses with the biggest and most obnoxious, like guy literally had a crane. A sign hanging from a crane. And I went to another lady, his next door neighbor had a sign that went across her fence supporting Hillary. And I went up and I just knocked on his door. He didn't answer, but I went over to the Hillary person. And then after that, I just traversed a neighborhood nearby and everybody I saw that had a Trump sign, I just asked them. I was like, what, and then the bigger ones, what about, you know, what drives you to have a sign this large to like share your values in this way? But being able to do that literally started with a hi, introducing myself, and then asking a question. And people were more than willing to share their perspective and their thoughts. And part of it is because nobody does. People come up trying to change your perspective and change their views. People come up yelling at you and telling you what you think is wrong or what they think. But how often do we go up, say hello, and ask a question and are actually trying to listen and understand somebody else's perspective? People are waiting for that. They yearn for somebody to listen to them. And like, I think I'm, again, to the point of making this a practice, I even during Trump's administration, he did a rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Juneteenth. And I talked to Trump supporters there and multiple people that I talked to said, no one's ever listened to me in this way. And I know we don't agree, but I thank you for listening to me.
At the end of the day, I can tell that this has become a really important practice to you and that you've been committed to it. But I can also imagine a lot of people thinking, what is the point of going to all that trouble, putting myself out in so many different ways when they're not going to change their mind? I'm not going to change my mind. Has it really made a difference in any way, do you think?
Yeah, I didn't go about it. I think, and again, I think the norm is like we go about this going in like I'm going to change who they are, right? I think in the end, I changed who I am. And that's important to me. I think I'm a better person for knowing multiple perspectives. It's the reason why I travel because I want to understand about different cultures and how people live differently. So if I'm willing to get on a plane and travel all the way 15 hours direct flight to South Africa, why wouldn't I do that same sort of cultural exploration in my own country? We are not a monolithic when we talk about Americans. We are not a monolithic when we talk about Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, progressives, etc. And understanding the nuances of who we are as people. I am more than my race. I'm more than my ethnicity, my nationality, my political perspective, my zip code. And like when you really get the opportunity to know who people are, it is such a gift. I take every single person that I have met on this journey who has been willing to share their stories with me, I feel is like a special gift. And that is something that I selfishly will always take with me. So to me, Julie, that's enough. I'm a better person. I'm a better person for it.
Misha, wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for allowing me the space to share my story. I'm appreciative, and I'm appreciative of the work you're doing.
Misha Lorato is the co-founder of Unite, along with a collective of individuals from diverse backgrounds, including Tim Shriver, chairman of the Special Olympics. Misha Lorato's current focus is another organization she founded called I Am We Are, which empowers youth in South Africa. You can find her online at iamweareyouth.org. And thank you for getting uncomfy with us today. Have you had a courageous conversation like she was describing? How did it go for you? Why did you choose to stick with that discomfort rather than lash out or bail out? I would love to hear about it. You can email your story to uncomfy@byu.edu. And in the meantime, check out my other podcast called Top of Mind. We explore tough topics in ways that can help us to practice staying open and curious when faced with challenging perspectives. We actually, not too long ago, did an episode about race, about what it means to be white in America. And a big portion of that was exploring how those of us who are white Americans can have more productive, courageous conversations about race and why we ought to. I had some humbling stick with it moments in the course of that episode, so I'd love to have you listen and reach out with your thoughts. You can find Top of Mind on your favorite podcast app, Spotify, YouTube, Apple, all the places. Uncomfy is a BYU radio podcast. Samuel Benson produces it, and the team includes Enrique Prado, James Hoops, and Sam Payne. Our theme music was composed by Kelsey Ney. I'm Julie Rose. Can't wait to get uncomfy with you again next week.